apply and would make that will valid and void. This particular clause would also, as far as the execution is concerned, say that those wills executed prior to the effective date of the act of ballot, but only for the purpose of the manner of execution.
I don't know that I understand. Say that again.
The general rule
about the wills have been executed prior to the effective date of this act,
right,
and they comply with existing law.
Right.
They're okay.
They're okay. But they are governed by the law in effect before the effective date of this act. So if a person has made a will on the basis of how our law read before the effective date of this act.
How about this with respect to valid and courtesy and everything?
Well, I would think that the problem is you don't know what the testator before the effective date of this act was thinking about. He was thinking, of course, in terms of the law of this state and existence.
No, he's taking an executor. I mean, a testator.
Would he be contemplating dower and courtesy as an aspect if he's making a will?
Well, if an attorney prepares that for him, the attorney is aware of the fact that dower and courtesy exist, and that what the options are today, the elections, for example, on the part of the surviving spouse, will this law, will this code, in those respects, apply to wills executed prior to the effective date of this act?
The will itself. If the testator was contemplating dower and courtesy or something like this, and is not being perpetuated, and it affects his testamentary disposition, he's going to have a problem making another will. See, you're really on the horns of the 11, too. There are probably a number of testators who have planned on the basis of existing law, and they would like to have their will carried through on the basis. Therefore, to make the act retroactive to them would disturb their plan.
That's true. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Does this apply retroactively?
Does not to wills,
right,
except as to the manner of execution.
Yeah, but it does in testacy states.
Yeah.
I think I see it. Except as to execution, this does not apply to disposition under the wills executed prior to the date.
That's right.
I see. Well, you've got to make some kind of a choice, I suppose.
You've got to go one way or the other, and either way you go, there are some instances where some people would, I suppose, some people who made a previous will would prefer to have this law apply. Others who made a previous will would prefer their present law to apply. If you have to go one way or the other, there's no way to determine the percentage of testator schemes that you're going to disrupt either way. That's the one way or the other. There's some expression that some people would like, after the fact, if it does pass it, between now and the date it goes into effect, they'd like to make wills on the basis of this new code. Does that mean they could not? Well, they might not be.
Well, I think you've got to be clear on this. I'm not certain that I am.
Here
is a will executed today. Mm-hmm. The husband, it's a husband's will. He provides in this will that he leaves his wife the minimum that is made mandatory that the surviving spouse receive under the law today. It's 1/4 of the personal property and a dower interest in the real property. All right, he's executed this. This act goes into effect. 5 years from now, he dies, and he has not changed his will. The will has been executed in accordance with existing law. Now, in that situation, the will is okay, isn't it?
Because it's all right.
And how will the disposition be made under that will?
The disposition will be made according to the terms of that will. Now, of course, if he dies after the effective date of the act, the new provision on the elective share will apply.
Well, that's what I mean. He dies after the effective date of this.
He wrote his will in contemplation of certain provisions of the law, but they were not built into the will themselves. He can't perpetuate his testamentary plan contemplating statutory provisions.
So in the situation that I've just pointed out, if he dies 5 years after the effective date of this without having made any change, then the wife under her election here will be entitled 1/2 of the real personal property.
Her elective share is 1/4.
Well, whatever, yeah, 1/4.
Elective share is 1/4.
Both real and personal.
As a matter of fact, it's probably more than you would have when he contemplated.
No, but that is my question.
You still have dower in those, do you?
Yeah, that's my question, would she have dower?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if I understand your question. Do you mean that in his will, he spelled out that he left her 1/4 of his personal property and dower, spelling it out in the terms of the will, or did he just refer to existing law?
No, I intentionally didn't say that. I said that he leaves her the minimum that he is required to by law, which is in existence at the time of the execution.
Phrases in that way.
Yes. Yeah.
Then, Mr. Will, speak again.
The will itself speaks rather than the time.
I think it's...
The will itself, but if he contemplated something outside of the will, he contemplated the existing statute on dower and curtain.
Yeah, but he can't.
Which can always change.
Yeah, that's right, that's the point, it can always be changed. Tony's got a very valid point, but that particular case, I think's easy to decide. The legislature gives the widow, and it's not the will and never was the will, it's what the legislature decides.
So it's whenever the law that's in effect at the time he died.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the answer. Bill, what do you think?
Well, I think the will speaks as far as the subsidy provisions, as of the date of death, not as of the date it's executed. As of the formalities, as to whether it's going to be a good or valid will, normally carved in here, there'd be no question. If it's good when it was made, it's going to be good later, even if we would change it, or it's going to be good after it. But to answer your question, I think, Senator, I would say that dower, the inchoate dower, is going to be abolished if you pass this act. So people are going to have no right to dower anymore, regardless of what the will would say, so far as it being a property right that's inherent in the property structure. But I think it's possible that if someone said in their will that they were giving to their particular person a dower right in all of their real property, that might be construed by the court as giving them a property equivalent because it's spelled out, so that they would be able to get the half interest for life or whatever it otherwise might be in its equivalent. That would be my
Do you agree with that, husband?
Well, I think so, but coming back to your question again, supposing they did leave the minimum and just left them a life estate in the real property.
Now, let's say he's thought about.
All right, just that way. And then he dies. The wife could then elect under the law as it exists at the time of death.
Yeah. That's the final answer we've had.
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
All right, I just wanted to be sure.
Senator, let me say also, if you don't do that, you'll have some, if you took the other approach, we're going to have wills being made now, people that may die 40 years from now, and everybody's going to have to go check back and find out what the property law was, or the law of the probate,
right.
I should say, 1969. So from the administrative standpoint, I think you have to make a decision. This is the better one to make, all factors.
Okay. I don't think too many of them in their will spell out other than just simply give you a life estate.
It isn't important whether too many of them do or do not.
Yeah.
One does. It's
well,
special.
I know, but now you think that any of them do that very many. I've never seen one.
Well, yes, I've seen them. Yes, I have seen them. Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Subsection 2 indicates that the Act applies to any proceedings which are commenced on the effective date or thereafter, regardless of the time of death. Also, as to any further procedure in proceedings pending on the effective date of this act, in other words, they'll use a new procedure if the estate proceeding is pending.
Well, that's procedure.
That's right. Except to the extent that the court might feel that things have gone along in such a way that the former procedure ought to apply, which would give the court some authority to be flexible in applying the new procedure, which is the general rule. Subsection 3 simply states that the president, the person representing the guardians and conservators, who are holding appointment on the effective date of that, continue. But they only have the powers which are conferred upon them and have something to do to impose upon them by this act. In fact, probably in most cases, the broader previous law. Powers and duties validly conferred upon them by the will. And section four is a, well, that's what validated the provision. Our savings clause. And it says that any act done before the effective date, so any accrued right which may have accrued is not impaired by this act. Exception to the fact that a right may have previously been barred. However, this doesn't cut off any statute of limitations. The whole purpose of the thing is to try to make a transition. That is, there's reasonable under the circumstances and not to throw out any rest of that. Section 304, the standard provision is put in long bills that have lead lines and hard headings and section headings, which says that they are not the law. They normally inserted for the purpose of explaining the law. And they do not necessarily express any legislative intent. Lead lines, in other words, are purely editorial.
So much, Chairman. Coming back to your point up here on do we have any different problem with our mutual ones? What would you say now? That, I don't think that was ever discussed. What do you say about that, Bill, where a husband and wife and mutual will?
You still compare those and have
combined?
I'd have to say, I'm not certain because I don't think it was ever discussed or ever considered.
It was.
By the committee.
I can't remember.
I would assume that each, the same principles would still apply, or as a will, it would still be governed to say that second spouse died, that's what it is, which we will be discussed, that it would be governed by the law in existence at the time he died.
Because the election to take might be a lot different.
Against that, maybe any kind of argument that was a contractual agreement between the two.
Yes,
I haven't really thought about that. I don't think anybody else has, right? If that is something we can look in and find out and try to find out and get an answer.
Maybe we should hold this up till next session. I would think that, that it's still the will of each of them. I don't see why it would, how in any manner it could come get away from the provisions of this code.
I suppose the contract would bind them against the election.
Well, I would think that would be the case. They would not be. They would be barred because of the contractual nature of this mutuality. But I, strictly off the top of my head, they'd be barred before this. I don't see why they wouldn't be barred here. Frankly, I've never seen one of those either. But that is the development.
Maybe the mutual. Yeah, lots of one second marriages for both parties.
Never saw.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right.
I can't hold up the court for that problem.
You can't?
Okay.
Section 305, the first repeal. Motion for the first repeal.
Now, you have a list of a technical amendments other than those that we discussed.
I have a list of what I think is some foundation of housekeeping. Would you like to go over those at this point?
Yeah, I think perhaps we can do it without spending too much time. Page 23, after state, leave the period, insert a colon.
happens is some kind of error, normally a colon precedes following paragraph.
All right, page 32, delete persons interested and insert interested persons.
You recall the standard phrase throughout the code, interested person, for some reason this became persons interested.
Page 34, line 3, after of, insert A.
I think you're a swearing witness, and I can swear these are all good ones.
Let's quickly go through this and see if there are any other committee members want any explanation on it.
One to delete a comma on page 48. You can check that one.
That was left in by error, by the way. That particular section was revised and somehow the original time bill got in by error.
Delete the commas.
Well, I don't see anything in these amendments that we have to go through. Somebody move the adoption of the amendments?
Absolutely.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion? All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion is carried. Now, doesn't that leave us with the Lent Lundy amendments? And I have marked here on sections 267 and 268.
Fine. That's the guardianship.
Oh, is it?
I think I was wrong. I think we those were all my problems. That's over in the guardianship part.
Yes, it is.
This one was amended, but I think they were.
267, 68, 69. I thought you might be.
Mr. Chairman?
It's on the
page. It wasn't on either.
No.
I guess I mixed up something better.
268. 269.
We'll go to 141 first on that part.
All right. Do you and Bob have your amendments?
We've got some money for
that. All right, let's go to section 141.
141 first. And Bob has worked out at 141A, Bob is the one bill concerning the reopening of the state, where there's an insurance policy.
There are copies of the section.
And does this amendment, Bob, tie into section 141, what we had already passed in Senate Bill 237?
This is 237.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this places in section 141 what we had already acted on in 237.
We didn't act on it. We held it up waiting for this.
Oh, all right. But anyway, whatever is in 137 is what's in this amendment.
It's reworded. Bob left this language a little better. I wanted first to talk about the recovery limited, but I don't see if there's any need for it because the only asset that would be left if you have to use this is going to be this policy, and so it's going to have to be paid for the insurance proceeds, or it's not going to be paid at all.
In effect, what this is an exception to the bar, the non-claim statute on a claim. In other words, a claim is not barred if you fail to present it. As long as you're only talking about an insurance policy and the extent to which the decedent is subject is covered by that insurance policy.
What's the statute of limitations for this?
There is no.
It would
be barred, I assume, by the general statutes of limitations.
Would it?
Oh, yes.
Why not?
Well, it says it is not barred by a failure to present it, as provided in subsection 3 of 141. And it specifically refers to the fact that it's not barred by this, and it doesn't say that generally it is not barred.
What if the person wasn't covered by insurance, but that they had certainly
more than enough taxes to pay.
But then it's gone. It's just Davis been imposed by 141.
Right. But if it was insurance, it's extended.
There's a liability policy, then you can reopen it, and if otherwise successful, recover up to the extent of the insurance proceeds. If it's an asset available only to a certain class of potential creditors, that is those who
How about the statute of limitations?
It says a claim for injury to or death of a person or damage to property to the extent that the liability of the decedent therefore is covered by insurance is not barred by failure to present it as provided in subsection 3 of section 141. It doesn't say that it's not barred also as presided in chapter 12.
Your position is that it's still in the statute of limitations.
I have no objection. Somebody wants to add that nothing in this section shall be construed to extend the statute of limitations as set forth in chapter 12 or if.
Bob, you're satisfied that it doesn't?
I'm satisfied with the statute of limitations.
Action for injury to the person or rights of another. Would definitely be size growing that.
Claim for injury to or death of a person or damage to property.
This is the terminology in chapter 30, by the way.
Well, if you're satisfied that this doesn't extend the statute of limitations, somebody move that the...
I do. Assert section 141.
Senator Lent moves that section 141A be added to the code in the form presented here by legislative council with the express understanding of the committee that there is no intention to extend the statute of limitation.
I'll trade your vote on this one and accept that as a
all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Now you have some more.
Pardon me. When you put this in the code, it's going to go in at 141A, but you're not going to renumber
it. I'm not going to renumber that whole thing.
You'd be renumbering too many.
It saves it. It's making 141A.
Yeah.
Yes.
On page 47, section 149, that looks to me like it's a powerful lot of cool, power. And I can't remember whether I was here to discuss my money or something. 47, the last two lines. First of all, the require sell, mortgage, lease, or otherwise deal with property of the state without notice, hearing, or court order.
He's just like a trustee, the personal representative is, under this new code, and responsible as a trustee. And he's going to be a great deal more careful, and actually it's one of the good provisions in the code that gives the personal representative this authority. And he's responsible for it, and he's bonded. And it's going to save the people to be involved, the heirs, a great deal of money in those cases. Okay, what's your other amendment, guys?
Well, we've got the one other policy decision is whether I had another one add on whether or not you have to present a claim where your claim is for damages, for personal injuries, death, or damage to property.
In other words, can you start an action without filing it?
Yeah, this is Senate Bill 266.
Yeah. There wasn't any opposition to that bill, as I recall, 266.
Is this in line? Is that the one that's good?
He combined the two of them together, you recall, and went insurance into this, and he said he didn't intend the insurance to be a part of this thing.
And this doesn't have anything to do with it. Ed, the ones he gave me after Bob and I got to looking at them, he had worked the insurance matter into this one as well as the other one, and neither one of us can see where it applies to this one. all we're saying here is that you don't have to present it to, this kind of a claim to the personal representative. Or go ahead and answer your usual act of law.
I noticed that there's a letter from Thomas Kavanaugh.
Thomas Kavanaugh, for many years, was an adjuster and then was employed as a clinical demonstrator by Bernier and Samuels. And about a year ago, they came to a parting of the ways. He still defends cases for some companies.
I didn't say that about what you were doing.
No, I'm just saying. You said,
is anybody damned more than Kavanaugh has just been damned?
No, well, Mr. Chairman, in order to be no problem, I'm going to let me forget about this one. I think that if you get hooked on this, if you don't get within the time of the stage open and you don't present it to him, I can't imagine an administrator or I'm even better off with this. Maybe times when I want to appoint the person representing, present the claim and tell the person representing, I don't care if they mark it aloud.
It's all right with me if you want it. I don't care.
I'll forget this.
What do we do in case of a mortgage foreclosure and the estate's closed and you want to file a
security claim?
You can
rely on your security.
Yeah. Yes, I know you got your security, but supposing the security isn't sufficient.
Well, you can file your claim if you wish.
If you don't, though, and all the claims are gone, the estate's closed. Oh, you're building. That's right.
You'd have to do that. But no, we didn't change that, did we?
No, you can rely on that security if you want. But if you figure the security isn't good enough, you can file your claim and that's a procedure for it.
Well, we didn't change the law on that, did we?
No. You say a claim on a debt due for which the creditor holds security may be presented. That's a claim. So, or the creditor may elect to rely entirely on the security without presentation.
What page is that?
Page 53, section 146.
But whatever you want to do with this.
I'll forget it. Let's forget.
All right. Do you have another one?
Well, the only thing is in section 269. It seems to me that there is a change here. This isn't just pure program, I may be wrong. Now, 268, I don't think they really do anything to rework this and make the 1 year after his death instead of after issuing the letter.
But how about that extra?
Now, the next thing they do crank in.
I want you to know you've been representing their absence. But then he convinced me it was okay.
No, we didn't. I told him that I was going to wait until you got here and had an opportunity to look at it. Right, how about family members?
Now, that 103 and 104, I think there is a decision that we have to make, and I think I boiled down my own mind to one decision, looking at section 103. And that is what I think that what was really sought to be accomplished here is to allow the spouse, surviving spouse, and dependent children in the household, really. Now that could take, instead of just a child of the decedent, there could be the dependent children of the surviving spouse who may not be children of the decedent. And there's one other thing. There may be dependent grandchildren in that house that certainly the decedent, if he had his brothers, probably if he had them there while he was alive or she while alive, certainly would have intended that they'd be able to remain there just like a child of the decedent. Now, I think the committee should make a decision, in other words. Do we intend to cover not only those named here, but also the dependent children of the surviving spouse who were members of the household, because this says may continue to occupy. And do we intend to go down one further step to, in effect, children of children, or even great-grandchildren, pretty damn remote, but really do we intend to go further than just children?
How about the surviving spouse by previous marriage has three children, 3, 6, and 8, and she remarries. Her new husband dies during their marriage. She only has the 8-year-old child with her. The 3 and 6-year-old are being taken care of by her sister. immediately following her husband's death, a 3- and 6-year-old, which her sister has been taking care of, are delivered to her and say, here are your other two children.
Well, I think she'd have problems then because they may continue to occupy part of my apartment.
Well, what would be the practical effect?
If she can
still continue to occupy it longer.
But supposing I just take my own condition and say instead of renting that I have that we have bought the house and now live in. I have two dependent children who are going to be their heirs. They take under my will. They take if I didn't have a will in certain ways. They live in San Diego. They're minors. I married a woman who has three children. They live with us. They're not dependent on me at all. Now the question is, should her children have a right, and they don't under this law, have a right to occupy the place of abode to the exclusion of the rights of my children.
But if she has the right, your children aren't going to come into the house unless they live with her anyway, because the house already occupied. So the fact that a secondary class doesn't seem to make a difference. I don't know. It doesn't seem to me like it does. If she was to die during that year, then there'd be a problem. But otherwise, the house is already occupied, isn't it?
Yeah, you're talking about her, but does she have a right to have someone else in there? Don't you and I, and the other on the opposite sides of a divorce situation came up like that a while back, in which the divorced woman was going to, maybe your firm was given under the decree the right to occupy the place until such time as the children had grown, or she. As long as she wanted to, until the children were grown. Then it was to be sold and the proceeds distributed. She got remarried, her new husband moved in, and my guy came along and said, oh, the hell with that. And says, you've got a right to occupy, and the kids have got a right to occupy, but that bum doesn't have any right to occupy.
Bill, did you have any discussion about this?
I take it in this section, 0928, you've changed the spouse and the spouse or so.
Yes.
I think as Senator Bailey's indicated, as long as the spouse is living, whether or not there are or aren't any dependent child, as long as she's there and continues to be there, I don't think you have any problem. I think the problem Senator Letford raised would be the situation where, say, that he marries a woman that has three children by a prior marriage, they're all living in the same house, and something happens to Senator Lent and his wife at the same time. So then all you have left are these three children, and would they have the right to be in there for a period of time? Is that what you're after, Senator?
Yeah, it's got various problems.
And I would say that they would not be covered by this as that is now read, because they would not be dependent child of the decedent, and I would say that we never discussed the matter.
What do you think about doing it?
Well, I first thought of getting at this because we're obviously, I think, trying to protect the people who are members of the decedent's family at the time of his death, his household. At first, I thought that we could make a definition, call it surviving family means. Then we could have said any or all members of the surviving family, the decedent may continue to occupy. But then surviving family began to get to me as I tried to pop it out. I don't know. If nobody else is much worried about it,
the only problem is,
we got no one other thing. This word or both that we did adopt is not good. This thing should be the spouse and
dependent children.
And any dependent child or children or all of us.
Well, I suggest that the trouble is if you use both, it sounds like you're
right.
Two people. Well, I suggested one possibility would be to say the spouse and dependent children of the deceased or any of them.
Yes, that's better. That would be better.
Yeah, that is better.
I'm okay.
Would you read that again?
It would be the spouse and dependent children of the deceased, comma, or any of them.
I think the only other thing we have is that my other problem was maybe the spite situation. Supposing that there's a row between my children by former marriage and some of whom are grown now, in my own case, and luckily there isn't any. But supposing that you have a spite situation, my grown children can file an action to keep my spouse's dependent children from living
Well, I move the amendment suggested by Bob Lundy on line 28, just for the record.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
I'll forget my other problems.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, Hansel was going to straighten it out anyway.
On this one on page 113, and I was supposed to be representing Lund, I'm not sure that I did after doing back. I said I was responsible, so I started reading more carefully. Line 24 on page 113. My first question. If you, I'm worried about striking this, now we're talking about the disability of a party. If we strike the or against on line 26, then I would read that as saying only the defendant guardian may make the motion to continue the case against the disabled person, which is not likely to do. Or if allow the action to continue by the guardian. I think it should say by or against. I don't know why that was a question.
Well, why was that stupid?
Probably because they couldn't think of a case where the
yeah.
where the action would be against him after the disability occurred.
No, this is a soliciting abatement. This is against the guy before you become disabled.
I think they thought the only situation that could arise was a death situation.
I think that's a good point.
In other words,
I even thought that, but that wasn't my point.
Yeah.
I'm going to raise your point next. I want to get this one out of my mind first.
Well, why don't you make a motion, Doc?
I move we add the words or against.
Reinsert the words or against on line 26, page 113. I think you're probably right. All in favor?
Aye.
All motions carried.
Mr. Chairman, on the point that Bud would have raised had he been here. On 21, line 21, you've got a suit filed against somebody. The suit is on the he dies. This allows the personal representative to give you no actual notice of his substitution and of the death. Wait for 4 months and then move to dismiss, have to keep notice publication and move to dismiss. And I'm not sure a personal representative should know how to do this if he hasn't first given the plaintiff actual notice. Remember, we're talking about a pending suit.
Against
the person who then dies. Now, part of the answer is, I suppose, that there aren't too many places in Oregon where you have no contact between the parties for a 4 month period. On the other hand, I can envision situations where the thing would just sit there and all of a sudden you're faced with a move, with a line of motion.
Play as long as
not necessarily.
Just not an interested person.
Publication is a notice. I said the word publication means a newspaper notice.
That's true. That's the most discreet thing.
And so, again, I have no idea.
I don't think you have too much of a problem there, but a rare case, I suppose, could arise.
Well, also since fiduciary versus
does it concern you, Bud?
It doesn't concern anybody else. I'm just doing my, acting as counsel for the.
I know you've told him five times.
Missing that one.
It doesn't concern me that much, really.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have one other one.
Okay. Your ward doesn't care.
All right. we voted on this before when only six people were here. And I would prefer we vote on it again if we can. I move on page 69. Strike 3 through 5. This gives the executor a proportion of the percentage of the property that he's not handling. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why this is justified. I understand the argument that was given to the study committee over the 2-year period, is sometimes you have extraordinary work in aspects of the state that are being covered. If so, the next paragraph covers extraordinary compensation. I can't justify compensation covering portions of the state that you do not have.
Well, I'd have no objection to that if you would tie in the subject matter of B, line 3-5, and make it clear that that is an extraordinary service.
Well, now, wait a minute. On a deal like this, aren't there a good many states where you handle them on a non-probate basis? And no jurisdiction of the court?
Of course, sir.
All right, now what do you do in a case like that, Don? Does that affect this?
No, this only depends on the person representative who is in the probation.
Okay.
I don't understand your suggestion. If I see you may be allowed by the court for any extraordinary legal services. Not ordinarily required. You mean?
And you see, these are ordinarily required of a personal representative. That's the point that I'm making. And if you would delete that, he'd get nothing under line 6-9.
That's right. Well, what he's doing, though, is
under the minimum.
Well, there's a lot of work, a lot of times in a non-probated state. Or the portion of it that's non-probate.
And the executive, the person representative is going to have more responsibility under the new code.
He will, in connection with those matters. Well, it'll be the same reading. And this is what's allowed attorneys under the
minimum bar.
Because typically it's cut here. That's one of the issues.
No, and I don't think that is. You want to call the roll?
No.
All right. All those in favor of the motion to delete, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. No. Motion to delete. John, I think that's all right. Let's entertain you.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether everybody else has got something they're concerned with. Did we delete section 115 on page 42, the whole section?
What page is that in?
Page 42.
Apparently the bar committee had a good deal of discussion on this point. I've been tired about this one.
That's a portion that came from Wisconsin law, and I think that it was deleted by... Well, it wasn't?
No, it wasn't.
It was not, I guess.
And suggested. It was officialized?
Yeah, that's right. It was not.
I was also stated that if we did delete it, it wouldn't damage the rest of the scheme. I mean, it wouldn't harm the rest of the bill in order to leave it, as I recall.
You probably should restore the condition law in that case. It's a question of whether one of your questions here is whether the probate court should do this at the time of the state position, or whether your divorce separation from the normal court should do it at the time of divorce separation from the normal court.
What this really does, or the reason I want to delete it is because it allows the court to make the will or to make the final disposition on the basis of facts which will be found after the decedent dies.
When the decedent's not there to
defend himself. When he's not there to defend himself one way or the other about it.
Even so, though, the facts that the court has to find are certainly important. Or well, makes that decision.
Yes. It does derogate from the proposition that people should have an elective share. It would be possible for someone to claim that there was an actual separation and to try to keep the spouse from getting the share that the legislature says she should get. There's so many different reasons for separation that if we're going to say you should get a share because you're a spouse, I think we ought to wait until there's a legal proceeding that has ended the marriage
the marriage relationship. Instead of saying you're going to get a share because you're a spouse, however, if you aren't living with him at the time of death, for whatever reason, you've got a lawsuit to find out what your share is. And it's not a matter of mistrusting judges.
What would you do in the case where they're having a great deal of difficulty and the wife sues for legal separation, files a complaint, shock is great, the husband dies, she doesn't have a decree, or say they've been separated for 3 weeks. The separation is practically just as effective as one which is decreed, and it may bring about some injustice in those particular types of cases. And I first had the same thought that you did, that there should be a legal decree. But then as I was thinking about it, it occurred to me that in order to eliminate that possible injustice, perhaps it's best to leave it to the court's discretion based upon his findings as to contributions and how long separated and married and so on and so forth.
I know.
And I don't feel strongly about it.
I know of at least one couple that have, at least three times they've left each other, and once or twice she's filed, and they always get back together. They really never get close to the courthouse door, but they sure fight with each other ahead of time.
Could we handle this by saying either a decree for legal separation has been obtained or applied for?
That wouldn't bother me as much as it does now. It seems to me that you could really get some trouble with avaricious children remaking the will through evidence that the widow is not able to do much about.
One reason. If you add whether or not the people who pay their appointment, that doesn't matter.
Well, it does better than the president does. I don't like it. I'm happy to delete the whole section because I don't see any point in it.
Where do you get this section from, Bob?
We've lived for 50 years with
it. It's in Wisconsin, and it may be in uniform.
We've lived for 50 years with a statutory share, which cannot be gotten rid of. I don't see any reason to put a lawsuit, a potential lawsuit up about that statutory share, if we're serious about providing one by statute. Of course, you obviously end up with compromise possibilities here, which has the effect of reducing what the legislature has said is the minimum share.
I think I'm for this one because of the broad petitions we give on support.
Did you find any in there?
There's no way.
We sure.
We must have got this from someplace.
Wisconsin.
You must go up.
Say, you fellas are ready to act on this section. We'll leave it for a minute.
If we take it out or change it, we're going to have to do a lot of renumbering.
Why don't we say under a decree of separation? Living apart at the time of the death of the deceased under a decree of legal separation, then the court can do something. What I'm talking about would be on line 20 and 21, we would delete the words on line 20, whether or not there was, and we would insert in their place under.
What if you were to say, if there was a decree for legal separation or such decree had been applied for, the court in its discretion may deny it?
Well, that's better than the existing section that's in there now. I like the actually the decree.
Go ahead, Ed. I don't think it makes that much difference.
I think the same thing you said.
Senator Fahey moves, I think, that section 115 be amended to read as follows, lines 19 through 21. If the decedent and the surviving spouse were living apart at the time of the death of the decedent, if there was a decree for legal separation or such decree had been applied for, the court in its discretion may deny any right to elect it, etc.
Yes, in addition, I would move at the end of the last sentence where it talks about what the court can take into consideration, I would say add the words, including any determinations of the court issuing the decree of legal separation regarding the distribution of property and status of property interests.
All right, where would you add that?
Just at the end, after circumstances. Including any determinations of the court issuing the decree of legal separation regarding the distribution of property and status of property interests.
Chairman, if you talk about a complaint for legal separation, if one of the factors, then you better say, or a complaint for legal separation or divorce.
Well, this is only when they were living apart.
No, look, if they're living apart, and if she files for a, if she files a complaint for legal separation under the Fahey Amendment, and then there's a death, that allows this, portion of it coming into effect, but if she's living apart and she's filed for divorce but has not yet gotten it, it would not. So if you're going to add a complaint for legal separation, you've got to add or divorce.
All right, let's act on the motion.
Okay. Including the words or divorce.
Where would those go?
After complaint for legal separation.
Or divorce.
Okay, let's go. Call the roll.
You got that number as well?
Yes, I will. Ives?
No.
Fagan?
Aye.
Husband?
No.
Jernstad?
Aye.
Lynn?
No.
McKay? Mr. Chair.
No. Motion. Now, Senator Burns has a few adoption amendments with reference to the adoption section that he wants to discuss. And he's carrying back and forth between here and Ways and Means. He has to vote on something. The subcommittee will be back in a few minutes. Aside from what he has, are there any others?
I've got one.
All right.
Can you turn page 31 for that?
All right.
Line 21 to 22. We provide for a non-resident, in effect, executor. But we don't provide for an effective non-resident administrator. I don't see why we should make any difference.
This thing was, I called this to the attention of the Husbands Committee, whatever it was. And I said I just simply couldn't see any sense to it. And they discussed it very thoroughly amongst themselves and notified me that they thought that it was all right the way it is. I can't see any reason for it.
If you have a non-resident, well, if you have a non-resident executor, the defeat of my previous motions a week ago, you're guaranteeing him a minimum fee based on a percentage of the state, and you're frankly guaranteeing that he's doing nothing by this section.
What does the executor do anyhow?
That's why I made my motion to cut the fees.
There should be no executive fees at all.
I agree.
Except, what do you do at your dear old banks?
I move to cut them down to reasonable fees fixed by the court. Where are my allies?
Sorry I brought it up. Just for that, Mr. Chairman, I have moved that we strike the words named executor in the will. That'll just close the number here. 21 and 22.
All right, you've heard the motion.
What are you proposing there?
You gotta delete more than that, don't you?
You actually probably have to delete subsection 6.
All right. I want to make that a non-resident of this state go back up. A person is not qualified to act as a personal representative who is 6. A non-resident of this state, except that a non-resident may qualify if he appoints an acting member of the state bar.
You don't agree with that philosophy.
I do. I'm only trying to say I don't see any difference. Why are you only when he's named in the will? What if the guy dies intestate? Why can't his closest surviving relative, who may be living in San Francisco, be named personal representative, whether or not named in the will?
Mr. Charles?
Yes.
With all these heavy duties we're placing on a personal representative, the assumption is that wherever he is, he still has to fulfill his duties and carry out all the charges we set to the same liability. All we're appointing is an agent for the summons.
Here's a comment in November that we sent to this committee. Qualifications of personal representative. Why not go all the way and let non-residents serve as administrators as well as executors? Neither do I see any necessity for requiring a bond of a non-resident personal representative in situations where a bond would not be required of a resident. In guardianships, we appoint non-residents as a matter of course with no apparent problems. As long as the non-resident appoints a resident agent, we should place no further restrictions. As a practical matter, I don't think it would be any harder to collect from a non-bonded non-resident executor or administrator than from a resident. We are particularly aware of this problem in our area where many people have property in both Idaho and Oregon and where spouses and children are frequently Idaho residents.
The committee took care of that bond situation.
The bond they did, yes.
Let's pass the call the question.
Senator Lent's motion, in effect, is that non-residents be permitted to act as administrators as well as executors if they name a member of the Oregon State Bar as an agent. Is that it, bud?
Well, it's striking those words, name executor in the will.
Name executor in the will. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
All right, motion is carried. Now, you had one.
I had one other, and it goes along with the terminology that was used in connection with the surviving spouse and dependent children occupying the building. You'll recall that there was some discussion whether you should use the same terminology as a support provision where it now says surviving spouse and any dependent child.
Uh-huh.
It has occurred to me since that discussion that if you thought there was a problem in connection with occupying the abode, that may very well be the same problem in connection with the support. So what you might want to consider doing is using where the terms spouse and any dependent child that would receive an appear in the support provision, starting with section 104 and a couple of other sections, might want to use the same terminology you'd often deny on the occupying the abode, that is, spouse and dependent children of the deceased are added to that. It appears a number of places which I have discovered. Most cases where it says spouse and children don't have any problems, go back to the basic section.
I really can't see that language we ended up adopting means anything different than the original language. I can't see that it does, because the word any is in the original language.
Yeah.
Well, you can make an argument that means pick out one. Spouse and any.
My only point is that if we change it one place and we haven't changed it with the other, are they going to argue you need something different?
I think that you've got to be consistent to even though there isn't any great difference in meaning. Senator Lent, do you make that motion?
I move that wherever it appears in accordance with changing the 9-103.
Any further discussion? Not all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Did you have any other spots?
There was only one thing I wanted to say. In going over my notes and Mildred's notes on some of the amendments that you previously adopted and fitting them in, there are some instances, I think, particularly in the case of those two that were suggested by the gentleman from the Welfare Commission.
Yeah.
The other night, where that word the whole thing is ready to go or not.
Why don't you clarify that then? If you can do it in better language than the amendments that they proposed and not do violence to the substance of what they had in mind.
That was one.
Hey, Brad.
When?
How?
Yeah. No, I know how. I want to know
when. That was that. That was an instance, too, if you recall your document.
I don't have to do this anyway.
Amendment to the definition of the definition of issue, which now says includes adopted children. You said added a word saying includes adopted children and their children. I suspect that should be adopted children and their issue if you're going down the whole line of linear sentences. But shall be considered an expense of administration, but shall not be considered a deduction for impairment.
Well, we don't care about that. Why don't you take that? Remove one of the buts.
Yeah. Page 39, line 24. That's the double butted line.
Yeah.
What line?
34, page 39.
If I don't change substance, it can be approved. Would you wish that to be?
Yes. Well, didn't the committee agree?
Yes.
Yes. Well,
I can't see how it can be approved.
Bill, can check to be sure I'm not doing it well.
Okay.
I'll appoint it over to my government subcommittee to check on
violence. You can pay members of council for the committee.
And extraordinary services.
1% of all the bills that are not in this committee.
Now, do you have any others?
The only two conflicts thus far that you've directed me to resolve. That is conflict with other bills. Now, Senate Bill 228, increasing the bank deposit, and the bill that has already passed both houses. Which one is that? The one that relates to, that's the amendment to the inheritance tax statute on the motorization.
Yeah.
Those are the only two I've made thus far.
The gift tax. Is the gift tax dealing to?
It doesn't conflict with an amended chapter that has been affected by that. Our number of other bills, as you know, and it's really a question of whether we catch these conflicts in this bill in the House or whether we catch them in your other bills or what.
Well, we've got to start moving, so we'll probably try to catch them in the House.
It's usually a good idea to get at least one of these bills passed, so you've got something to work with. You're probably trying to adjust conflicts with all of them to fill in the bill. It creates some problems.
All right, would you wait a little while?
Run off the notice paper wall.
Shall we turn to Senate Bill 267? That's one by that there was a lot of opposition to.
Would you like to make a motion to table that one?
Either that or take no action on it at this time.
I'm wondering if Bud wants to make a motion.
Suspense.
Well, somebody is going to be sent. I move we send the floor with two.
Any discussion? You've heard the motion. I don't. I think there's too much objection to it.
heard the motion. Call the roll.
Ivers?
No.
Zayden?
Aye.
Chasman?
No.
Jerns?
No.
Lynn?
Aye.
McKay?
No.
Wilner?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
No, motion failed.
Let's go on to the next one.
277.
I'll make the same motion.
Heard the same motion, I make the same speech. Removing guest passengers. Call the roll.
Ivers?
No.
Zayden?
No.
Chasman?
No.
Jerns?
No.
Lynn?
Aye.
McKay?
No.
Wilner?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Don't put them in the house next time.
You've got some good ones here, though.
Yeah, I got the same reception as the house.
Look at 297. Should we defer that?
What about 30?
30, well, we got to defer anyway.
I'll defer. I move we defer further consideration.
Nothing is going to be done on these JV bills except that when we pass that, probably need the house anyway. So we just will get on the poker.
What was your recommendation?
To defer it.
I move that
the deferred section.
Senate Bill 297 be deferred.
Is there any discussion? Call the roll.
Burns? Ivers?
What?
Zayden?
Aye.
Chasman?
Aye.
Jerns?
Aye.
Lynn?
Aye.
McKay?
Aye.
Wilner?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, I just need to move to defer the legislature, didn't it? We didn't send out.
We'll probably.
298,
so. My two bills.
Oh, I will come to
them. You already did.
They've come.
The ones I moved to send to the floor and the motions failed.
Oh, all right.
Yes, I moved that those two bills, which Senator Land just referred to, be deferred.
You've heard the motions. Call the roll on the two of the ones.
277.
Ivers?
Aye.
Zayden?
Aye.
Chasman?
Aye.
Jerns?
Aye.
Lynn?
No.
McKay?
Aye.
Wilner?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. But on 266, since we're putting that in the code, do we have to do it, or should we just leave it for a while?
266, we didn't, we're not putting it.
No. All right, is there a motion to table 266?
I'll move it.
You've heard the motion. Call the roll.
Ivers?
Aye.
Zayden? Chasman?
Aye.
Jerns?
Aye.
Lynn?
Aye.
McKay?
Aye.
Wilner?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. What? This. Oh, excuse me, sorry, right now.
237.
Say, incidentally, on the Lawyers Corporation bill, Gerson Goldsmith came up there and discussed this matter at length with me. And sent in, he's been working on these for 10 days, he sent in a whole bunch of amendments. I have not read them, but Misko and all those who testified with respect to this, sent me a letter saying that these amendments accomplished exactly what they were trying to do in 303. And here's what they are on page 2.
Pardon,
303. You all have copies. Line 27. Insert after personal service in this state.
Mr. Chairman, looking at paragraph 1 of the company's memorandum,
I haven't read.
The amendments are probably not in the form required by the Committee for Bill Amendments. Is anybody?
Well, I don't know. We can probably, with Bob being here as we go through them, we can probably take care of it. And then on page 2, line 32, after the words such as
insert the words, the services performed by.
Page 2 of what page?
Of page 2, line 32. After the word such as, insert the services performed by.
We had one.
We took out,
did we? Can you say that? Suggested to us that we take out this, starting with such as the rest of that subsection when the original testimony.
Well,
raising certain problems, apparently, were raised in some other state by putting in the such as.
I don't know.
If we took out those words, we wouldn't need the services performed by. Yeah, I don't know if we ever actually adopted it, but that was suggested to us by the witness, the lawyer who testified from Mark's office.
Yeah. All right, this too will end.
He also, Mr. Chairman, you recall, suggested that we strike the words starting line 28 and going into line 29, strike the word requires its condition preceding that center and going down to it, including obtaining up in the next line.
Well, I don't know. Should we submit this to a subcommittee, this particular bill with these amendments? Would you serve on that, Bud, you and Ed?
Can we get Goldsmith and Captain Mott's office down?
Yes.
I'm sure that'd be
when
either Goldsmith or Gordon Beck. I'd say Gordon Beck, I have a lot of confidence in him.
All right. Would you ask who was that fellow from Mott's office?
McSweeney.
Yes.
Buzz notices in parts here, he says, the committee, look at section 10, page 2, he says, this is a major problem, deserves committee attention. He needs something else. You've got to call him up and ask him to solve that himself.
I think that's a good idea to have a subcommittee ordinance.
All right, that's what we'll do then. Senators Lynn and Fabian, you will contact McSweeney and Beck and find a time that's suitable for Lynn and Fabian.
Yes, we didn't pass the
Senate Bill 398. Fable. We amended that, you know, by a statement.
Move it out to pass.
As amended.
Yes, amended.
You've heard the motion. Do you want to talk about it and discuss it? Another thing? Call the roll.
What is it? I have any comment. 398.
Termination of parental rights in cases where the parents have consented to the termination and have requested commitment of the child, et cetera, et cetera.
I move, Chairman, on 914, after the word consented, add by written, by notarized statement.
Those three words.
All in favor of the amendment, say aye. No, his suggestion was by a written statement under the name. Senator Lent said, well, what does the oath do with it?
So I substitute. I don't want to raise their hand. I want to realize it's doing something of some significance.
All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Now Senator Wilner moves that he passed out as a minute. Call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Bailey?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Senate Bill 412.
Oh, is it? International Park. I don't see why you guys have got this thing against the ACLU up there in their county. Make a motion, let's vote on it. All right, I move it out of the pass.
The discussion, that's killing.
You've heard the motion.
I have to figure out what it does.
Yeah.
If that would get the bill, I'd say thank you.
I know. Now, the reason for the bill is that all of the people will be asking for a jury trial, and none of them will be paying for it except a few under the equal protection. I don't mind them having two jury trials, but the cities think it is burdensome since it is not constitutionally required at all for them to have two jury trials. They will get one before a jury of 12 in circuit court on appeal. The present provision says they can have a jury trial, but it costs $30. The $30 part cannot be enforced against the person who is poor or appears to be poor. So, the present circumstance is that the cities are required to provide a jury trial without getting any compensation for it, and the jury trial does not settle the matter because you have a constitutional jury of 12 upon appeal in the circuit court.
I think they ought to kill it forthwith because, at least in Multnomah County, where you have a jury in municipal court, it advocates in municipal court, which I think I say often, but if I have the one I care about, and I ask for a jury, it goes before a judge, place them for a good. I have had municipal court jury cases, and they dispose of them. The alternative is essentially in our county getting up to circuit court as fast as we can, which means you sit there with a conviction against you for maybe 4 months. How much time you may have lost your job, or you have all the disabilities of the court conviction. I see no harm in the provision. I think in many cases you can get a jury termination at the end.
ACLU made a study of the Portland Municipal Court and recommended that this change be made there, and they published it. I don't know that much about the Portland Municipal Court. However, this business about having a conviction against you for a couple of months, you have it on appeal, and you have an appeal bond, and you don't have any disability resulting from that because you're on appeal.
And the cities are already going to be charged maybe with some extra expense of providing attorneys. There's a possibility of that.
It seems to me like they're bound to be.
All right.
I think I vote for this bill.
All right. Mr. Chairman, one more.
Oh, right.
In the city of Portland, I think if the fine is under $20, I don't believe there's any right of appeal there, which would mean that this is passed. You have no jury trial. The fine is missing.
Right. You don't give them the jail sentence or stick them for more than $20, so there isn't any right of appeal.
And if the fine isn't more than $20, there's no right to a jury trial under the Constitution present, is there?
In a criminal case?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well,
you're talking about civil cases.
I guess I am.
Civil cases, then.
I guess I am.
The thing is that I've seen deliberately in Portland, when they got a lousy case, find the guy guilty to protect Fred Meyers where it's a shoplifting thing or something, alleged shoplifting, the guy's found, and then they find him $15, so you can't appeal. Find him guilty, protect Fred Meyers, and then find him $15.
All right, call the roll on the motion to do that.
Ivers?
No.
Fabian?
Aye.
Husband?
Aye.
Drinkstead?
Oh.
Lynn?
No.
I'll tell on you.
No. No. Willer?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Why don't one of you guys defer that in a hurry?
Okay.
So moved.
Senator Lynn, move to be deferred.
I'm going to belong to ACL.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
No. 153. I think it's 153.
I still got to file my income tax tonight in Eugene.
153, remember Gavin appeared and Judge Allen appeared and has a letter on it, and I don't think they know quite what they're doing.
And I was informed the chairman of a subcommittee. I investigated the matter thoroughly, and I think the motion should be made.
Senator
Wilmer, I don't want to move it, though.
I think move that be deferred.
I make no motion, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilmer doesn't want to make the motion.
Well, that's out of the subcommittee. Did
Bill Ford appear against this bill? I'm sure he did.
Ford appeared against the bill. I was appointed to work with Joe Thim. I told Joe Thim, you're wasting time talking to me, convincing juvenile judges. He wrote to Ford and Allen. Ford wrote a letter to all the judges asking for comment. Nobody got any comment.
Well, I'm going to be deferred.
All right, you heard the motion. Call roll.
Ivers.
Aye.
Hayden. Husband.
Aye.
Junestead.
Aye.
Lynn.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Wilner.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. It's been deferred. 154. This is the one that they raised the question where the cost of additional money to send these kids to school.
Mr. Chairman, I want this one to be deferred.
You heard the motion? 154. Call the roll.
Ivers.
Oh,
Ivers. So I should tell them, should we remember what it's about?
My office.
I wasn't here then.
All right, go ahead. Mr. Chairman,
it's a no
deal. Tillamook County, where there's a youth camp, and somebody escapes, they'd rather not have the escape tried there. They'd rather send it back to the county from which the person was sent to the camp because it'll cost them some money to try them. But the point being, this doesn't arise very often, and also the witnesses are down in Tillamook County where the escape took place. The witnesses aren't in Madure County where the one man is sent.
All right. John Hollerall on deferring 154.
Aye. Ivers.
Aye.
Hayden.
Aye.
Husband.
Aye.
Grinstead.
Aye.
This is on the standardizing the confirmation by the Senate. What it doesn't do, it doesn't attempt to change the confirmation or to provide confirmation for any appointments that presently are not required to be confirmed, but provides a standard confirmation for what we now have.
Since it's 9:30 at night, I don't think we agree that we shouldn't try to rewrite all the substantive provisions on those points.
Is there a motion to do that? We've heard the motion. Senator Lent moved.
June, sir.
All right, call roll.
Mr. Chairman, I know we went past it. Senate Bill 154 seems to be unconstitutional. If anybody ever asks about it.
Did we go past it? I thought we just passed it.
Oh, you've gone past it by getting rid of it. It's been deferred. But if anybody asks about it, you've got to try an offense that a county clerk has committed. Section 11 of Article 1-7.
Supreme Court case in November.
We're going to be underway.
One of these. It's 1 out of 15 that they probably got me aside. Obviously, all it was. All right, Senate Bill 481. This is one that Bernie and Senator Wilner had a discussion about, and I think Senator Wilner volunteered, I just want to mention it, maybe you want to take action on it, volunteered to change the language somewhat. Do you want to go through that? Or?
Pardon me, I asked Bernie, would you make some suggestions? He said he would. Bernie.
George Bernie.
George Bernie, this is acting like George Bernie raised the question that we haven't, that not enough has been done and he can't find him residing in the address. I said that there ought to be some specific standard rather than having it thrown in your face retroactively. He said that he'd be you'd be going to try to add some other things that the person has to do.
Would you notify Mr. Burney that for him to provide the language by Friday, if he doesn't, we're going to act on it. I don't think that's enough.
I was willing to do that this without regard to the time of inquiry by day 5. I think that, in fact, I wanted to change that, if you remember, that I wanted to be within a reasonable time of the preceding filing of the affidavit or something like that.
And you mentioned show time of inquiry.
I'll put some attention to that part.
All right. Will you contact Brady?
Yes, sir.
Talking about 481?
Yes.
The only one point, Mr. Chairman, you'll recall in the probate code where they're talking about the affidavit with respect to absentee decedents, and there was language in there concerning the diligent search. And I was assuming that with respect to the sufficiency of that affidavit, the same showing would have to be made as presently required to be made. That is the circumstances showing the diligence. Maybe I'm wrong.
This is the only
this is a departure from that. And I don't have any objection to this, really, but I think
that's what it is.
I think that we better our legislative history on the sufficiency of the affidavit showing diligent search in the probate.
For what kind of a anyway?
For absentee to see.
Oh, God, you mean you're going to inquire about this guy through Social Security and so on?
I don't know. I think that our legislative history should be clear on that. Yeah, but I don't care which way, what we do. But I mentioned to you when we went over it. Mm-hmm. I don't have any objection to
your
bill here.
Well, let me wait, because I don't like this. This isn't what I intended.
All right.
And this without regard to
you work on it. How about the 478? There's nothing wrong with that bill.
Move it out to pass.
You've heard the motion. Call roll.
Burns.
Aye.
Faden.
Aye.
Hudson.
Aye.
Jernstein.
Aye.
Lance.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. 477. Now, there was an amendment to that bill, but the motion wasn't formally made on line 10.
Yes, I agree. I said that, I think, in the presentation.
Yeah. You want to, Senator Lent moves that the words, and I think I might, of the services of the child and on line 10 be deleted?
Well, I think I'm fairly compensated for the doctor, hospital, and medical expenses caused by the injury. So we can take out, starting line 10, lost by the parent, parents or guardians of the services of the child, and strike all those words.
Yeah, that's what I said. Strike out the words of the
starting with loss.
Start with loss, yes.
And go to the last word.
Delete all of line 10 except the last word.
Right.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion is carried.
Well, even if you, wait a minute, you're going to have two of these together.
Yeah.
Right.
You need to delete all of line 10.
Yeah,
all of line 10.
All right, amend the motion and carry it amended. Senator Lent moves.
Well, wait a minute, we got to amend the 14 also.
Oh, yeah, same thing.
We after the word four in line 14, strike the rest of the line.
Well, you want the word D, don't you?
Yeah, there you have to have a D. Yeah.
Well, do you? Or doctor, hospital, medical.
That's the rest of the section. All those in favor, Senator Lent's motion. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Senator Lent now moves that the 477 be sent out with impact recommendation as amended. Call the roll.
Aye.
Rogers.
Aye.
Faden.
Aye.
Hudson.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Lent.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Willing.
Aye. Now, would you turn to House Bill, the Health Bill, House Bill 1158, the anatomical gifts. And there is an amendment, an additional amendment that has been suggested, which everyone approved. It's from the University of Oregon Medical Hospital. And they say, we would therefore request that Section 5, turn to that, read as follows. the following persons may become donees of organs, tissues, or parts of bodies for the purposes stated, end quote, etc. We request that you limit this to parts of bodies.
This is the drying up market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, cadavers apparently.
The cost of cadavers is going to go up if this bill passes in present form.
His letter says, we approve the intent of the above bills to implement the procurement of organs, tissues, and body parts for transplants and surgical operations. We recognize the priority of this need. However, we hope that these bills will not weaken the provisions of ORS 97, 130, and 170. We rely on these bills for our procurement of cadavers and bombed bodies preserved for anatomical study, for our teaching programs in medical and dental schools. At the present time, cadavers are referred only to the medical school, and our morgue serves as a cadaver bank. If Section 5 is adopted, then any hospital, physician, college, or specified individual may become donees of bodies. This would greatly weaken our position in obtaining cadavers. Each year, it is more difficult to obtain an adequate supply of satisfactory bodies for medical and dental education. The current trends...
Let alone in, other things.
Yeah. The current trends in social legislation make this more difficult. We therefore request what I've told you. It has taken years to develop friendly communication between this medical school and the funeral directors, coroners, and other agencies through which we receive cadavers. We would like to keep this line of referral to this medical school as direct and uncomplicated as possible. With the planned increases in the enrollment in medical and dental schools, we will need more cadavers. We will appreciate your giving this your careful consideration.
I move the anti-grave robber amendment.
Will that be read on the floor?
No.
fully reported is more impressive.
I didn't know that one over here.
This is the necrophilia.
I don't see a name on
that. All right. Who moved the amendment?
I won't let him expect more than 3 minutes.
Senator Burns moves the amendment. All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Now what is your place on the bill?
There was a place in this bill on limiting the liability of the doctor.
Oops.
I had it marked on the other. I had it marked on the other bill.
On 109.
Section. No, I had it marked on the other one, but I
Section 5 is the intersection.
No, here's the thing. And this bill is page 6, line 3. I would like after the words in good faith, except to no probable cause. What we're getting into here is this question of, among other things, when the donor is dead. And this is an awful, awful important debate.
What would that probable cause refer to?
Well, what I'm talking about is I wanted to. Let's talk about the situation I'm talking about and see if we've solved it. The doctor is a little anxious to get that transplant into the recipient while it's still in good working order. He is negligent in determining whether the donor is dead. The question arises, and he says, I was acting in good faith. I thought he was dead. I think that if you're expecting somebody to be reasonable in other situations,